teased him, and he didn't take back, Mamdani, that he had called Trump a fascist.
Yeah, being principled is a winner in two ways. It's because that's the way you advance a politics worthy of the name Democratic Socialist, worthy of the name Progressive. You stick to it. You have an analysis, and you have a commitment to changing what is fundamentally wrong. Let me say that, as the title of my new book, by the way, which is free at blueroad.info for anybody, blueroad.info will be a way you can read the book. It charts the way in which we have been led down the path to a fascistic politics out of the White House and Congress and much of the judicial branch because of the failure of corporate Democrats to defeat Republicans or have decent policies. So this is, as I said at the beginning of our discussion, this is a field of struggle. Let's struggle to change the Democratic Party. That's the only way next year and in 2028 to defeat this fascistic Republican Party.
Norm Salmon, we thank you for being with us, director of Roots Action, author of the new book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, How Corporate Democrats Paved the Way for Autocracy. And we'll link to your piece in Common Dreams and The Guardian. That ends it for our show. Happy birthday to Dennis McCormick. Happy News Year. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's zine, The Boo Beat, is back with a second issue, featuring KBOO's program guide, interviews with local activists and community members, spotlights on local businesses, on-the-ground reporting, and fun quizzes and crosswords. Our zine has its finger on the pulse of Portland, and you won't want to miss it. To snag your copy, visit kboo.fm/zine.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Rumble on the River, presenting their 28th community forum, What's the Deal with Data Centers, on Wednesday, January 7th at 825 Northwest 18th Avenue. Doors and info tables at 5:30 p.m. and community panel at 6:30 p.m. More info available at 350pdx.org/event.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Thanks for being with us. This is a very special edition of the KBOO Evening News. It's the best of 2025. From December 24th through January 2nd, we'll be featuring some of our favorite news stories from the past year. I'm Althea Billings, news director here at KBOO, and I'm so pleased we get to showcase some of our work from 2025. Before we get into things, I want to remind you that KBOO is in the last week of our end-of-year campaign. If you'd like to support local, volunteer-produced news reporting, consider donating to KBOO. Every dollar counts. You can go online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you. On this episode, KBOO reporter Anna Wilcox takes us through a timeline of ICE's actions in the Portland area and how communities have responded.
It all really started on October 30th when 35 workers were going to work in the morning. Farm workers, construction workers, landscapers, and they did not come home that day because ICE was patrolling our community.
I'm here today because people who are imprisoned in the land of the free makes it unsafe for all of us.
We just want an end to the cruelty, really, when it comes down to it.
On June 4th, activists in Portland, Oregon began demonstrating in front of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Facility at the intersection of McAdam Avenue and South Bancroft Street. The protests were in response to an escalation of deportation tactics from the Trump administration. The stories and interviews throughout the special broadcast are intended to highlight and document the past 6 months of protests in Portland, with some segments from Woodburn. This broadcast, however, is far from complete. Many of these stories are still under investigation and will continue in 2026. KBOO would also like to thank everyone who spoke to our reporters and made this broadcast possible. We value your compassion, vulnerability, and perseverance. We'd also like to give a content warning for violence and trauma. It's midday on June 12th, and we're standing outside the ICE facility off McAdam Avenue. The beige building features stacked rooftops, one up high and another juts out like a mezzanine below. A large white metal gate runs ceiling to floor, blocking the driveway entrance of the building. There's a rally here put on by three local grassroots organizations: Portland Contra las Deportaciones, Portland for Palestine, and Freedom Road Socialist Coalition. The protests looked like any other. Organizers held speeches, shouted chants, waved signs, and made noise in protest in front of the building. KBOO talked with organizers Holly Brown and Omar.
I expect to give an opportunity for people to come out and share their frustration with this administration and to show that they will not be quiet while Trump attacks some of the most vulnerable among us. So I'm really looking for this to be an empowering day where people are able to share their voices and stand up with people who are under attack. My ultimate hope is that we turn coming out today into tangible action. So I want us to pressure the Portland City government to kick ICE out of Portland. This building is under lease and the government has the ability to actually revoke their lease. So things like that, we're hoping for tangible differences today.
Omar told KBOO what motivates them personally.
On a personal level, my parents are immigrants. I have a large community back home in Southern California of immigrants. People, you know, in my neighborhood where I grew up, it defines me, I think, a lot, aside from, you know, the broader picture of, like, these are human rights abuses, you know, whether undocumented or legal. Immigration, like, it doesn't matter, like, everyone's rights are being violated, people are being violently pulled apart from their families. And what we're seeing in Los Angeles is really disturbing.
At one point during the rally, the guards began lining up behind the driveway gate. They're wearing tactical uniforms and carrying pepper guns and spray. Approaching SUVs are shielded by the officers. The cars are trying to enter the building through the crowd. The agents began shooting pepper balls and used cans of mace to disperse the crowd as they opened the gate. The protesters backed up but chanted, "When Trump says go back, we say fight back." After the guards got the cars through the driveway, they retreated back into the building. KBOO asked demonstrators if anyone had been injured. They told KBOO about a different day.
On June 4th, outside here at ICE on the afternoon, there was about, 5 to 10 protesters. And so the security guards, this is their formula. The security guards call the police to tell them why, but the police come in and arrest us. The problem is that once the Department of Homeland Security handcuffed us, they took us inside of ICE.
They told KBOO that they were turned over to different officers inside the building.
And we're all three are U.S. citizens, and they touched us all over. They searched our bodies all over. They searched our belongings all over. And we were already handcuffed. They put leg irons on us, so now our feet and our hands are tied together, even though we're not under arrest. And they forced tell them that they're going to take his braids out, which is against our culture. Almost every tribe, that's against their culture, big time. And then they came over with my indigenous earrings out, which is also very much so against our culture. But the biggest complaint I have is that they put leg irons on us, and they put them on extremely tight just to inflict pain upon us. I'm a veteran. I served in Desert Storm. I took an oath to a constitution, and Portland has proven to me over and over again in these last 10 years that the constitution absolutely does not exist for us, and I was really gullible believing that it did, so it was really hard to take, you know?
A volunteer medic stepped forward.
We've had a lot of really, really brutal injuries here over the past week. On Tuesday evening, ICE came out of the building at random, spraying people with mace, pepper-balling people in the face. They were shooting at medics. They shot at me. I'm an EMT. They full body, just all the way up and down, maced this one girl to the point where we had to, like, take all of her clothes off and, like, scrub her whole body with Sodacum wipes. And it's unbelievable the amount of brutality that we've seen. They've deployed gas almost every night.
Demonstrators outside of the ICE facility clean up after guards deploy rounds of munitions to disperse crowds. Each time federal guards fire munitions into the crowd, pepper bullet casings, rubber bullets, and sometimes burnt flashbangs or mace canisters linger. Later in June, a demonstrator talked to KABU while they were cleaning up.
So all of these came out of one of their paintball guns. These are rubber bullets. They are not rubber-coated steel bullets. I can feel the weight in my hand and feel that there isn't steel inside, although usually they do have steel inside. These colored ones, there's a bluish-purple one and two red ones. They've got powder inside of them, and these are either pava or pepper balls.
Yeah.
Which are the spicy paintballs that they shoot at us. Pava is a different type of chemical than the standard pepper balls. I don't understand a lot about it, but in my experience, it makes you real mad.
Over the first weeks of June, Portland police made several arrests at the ICE building. Tensions in front of the facility peaked the night of the June No Kings protest. Portland police declared a riot in front of the facility. The daytime protest was festive. The event kicked off with speeches and entertainment.
I want you all to give a big warm welcome to Portland City Council President Ilana Pearl Giddey. And so did four asylum seekers whose stories we learned about last week here in Portland. But my great-grandparents were allowed to stay. And these four Oregonians were detained while attending asylum hearings. And our president has every intention to send them and tens of thousands of others back to
Hey, marched peacefully along the NATO waterfront park, chanting and holding signs.
So why are you here today?
Daughter of an immigrant.
Yeah. All right. What do you hope people know about this protest and everything that's happening today?
That just Trump can go to hell.
I'm here to represent Portland and represent the force that's going to stand up against fascism. It's shocking what's transpiring, and just found that there's a way to actually express some sort of discontentment with everything that's going on. So probably the same as everyone else here, but power in numbers, and it feels good being out here right now.
So I feel like I need to do something again, and I can't do much of anything else.
What does that mean to you?
Means to me that nobody's illegal.
I'm an ombudswoman. I work as an advocate for people on Medicaid for the Oregon Health Authority. And one of the things that Oregon has done in the last year is create the Healthier Oregon Program, which creates full Medicaid benefits for people who are undocumented. And this week, the Trump administration is forcing the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid to turn over information from states that are providing benefits to people that are undocumented, and that's going to have a devastating effect on public trust in the benefit that we provide as well as the benefit itself.
All right, what brings you out here today?
Just the several injustices that are happening around America since, January 2025. Obviously don't agree with all the ICE raids, but I feel like a lot of our rights are being taken away every single day, executive order after executive order. Just going against checks and balances and all that other stuff.
And can you tell me, what does your sign say?
It says, "We abolished monarchy in 1776. Kind of playing off those executive orders.
Would you like to share?
I'm here because this country was built on immigrants, and the only true Americans were the ones that were oppressed and colonized. And I feel like it's ironic that we're forgetting a lot of our history, and that our president is, or like the whole Trump administration is trying to just whitewash every single aspect of our history. And also because, the ICE raids, I don't agree with that. I also don't agree with honestly everything that he's doing, and I feel like it's the most patriotic thing to do, and stand up and use your voice and to get out there and protest for what you feel is right before you can't anymore. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay, what does your sign say?
It says, "The flag protects us all, or it protects no one. Remember your oath."
My name is Deshaun Murphy. I'm here volunteering with the organization, the Nation of Brothers Keepers. The reason why we're out here today is primarily our country is in a critical state. It's more and now more and ever more important than anything for Americans to get back out and get active to fight for what it means to be American. We have people for hundreds of years since the foundation of this country have been trying to tear down its principles and which makes this country great. And it starts first and foremost with that Constitution, our rights, our amendments, and we have people violating that on a daily. It's like the human body. If you stop using something, things go dormant. And then other body parts of the body start to compensate or take advantage. You start losing other things. That's what our government is doing to us, because we are exercising our rights every day. We need to exercise them, get out here and protest and organize, come together peacefully.
You are listening to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News. We're taking a look back at the last 6 months of ICE protests. We've just finished up our coverage of the June No Kings protest, which drew thousands to the downtown Portland waterfront. Coming up now, we're going to air a few segments of an interview with Dina, who is one of the many who have been organizing in front of the ICE facility since early June. She is a deacon at her church and has been handing out red Know Your Rights cards to anyone who wants one.
These are our constitutional protections, the things that are supposed to be in place that say across the board, these things apply to all humans within the U.S. And there's a lot of things that are happening right now that are not legal. There's a lot of these rights that are being violated by the state, by, these state agencies on the federal level. You know, Donald Trump himself has very rigorously admitted that he's not going to defend the Constitution in the way that a president should. And so, especially in cases of people who are protesting or people who have an immigration status as opposed to people who are citizens, they're at higher risk right now because they are, you know, the federal agencies are just throwing all of our protections out the door, and they don't care that we have a freedom to speech. They don't care that we have a freedom to peaceable assembly. And they don't care that these immigrants are going through all of the channels that we tell them, all of the hoops to jump through. And they're following all of those things. And it's us who are not holding up our end of that promise.
What do you think motivates you? Like, why? What really drives you to speak out, do you think?
Like I said, it's a very... I come from a rich history of service that was just ingrained in us. I come from a long history of teachers, preachers, and various types of community leaders. Most of them were military service members. I married a man who was in the military. He's now out. He's a veteran now. But we've always strongly believed in service in one way or another. I believe in the rule of law. I believe in, you know, this service to my country that my husband did. And this is not what he signed up for. This type of behavior is just so antithetical to what we've been told America stands for our entire lives. And it's just such a gross misrepresentation of what we believe America truly is. And so it just feels so absolutely necessary.
Activists protesting in front of the ICE facility in Portland have been advocating for the city of Portland to revoke the permit on the building. The building is a processing facility, not a detention center. The nearest ICE detention center is in Tacoma, Washington. Federal officers in Portland are not allowed to hold people at the McAdam ICE facility for longer than 12 hours. But federal officers have violated this term of their permit agreement at least 25 times since October of last year. This means that they held people in detention for more than 12 hours in direct breach of their permit contract with the city of Portland. Next, we'll head to City Hall, where two local groups planned a rally during a routine city council meeting on July 16th.
Repeat after me. No fear, no hate.
No fear, no hate.
No eyes in our state.
No eyes in our state.
No fear, no hate.
No fear, no hate.
No eyes in our state. My name is Beatriz. I am here part of a group called PDXED, Portland Contra las Deportaciones, Portland Against Deportations. We are also here as part of a coalition, Revoke the Permit Coalition, and we are here to tell City Council to do their job and revoke the permit.
The only solution is for every city and every state in America to say no to legalized human trafficking. As a sanctuary city, we have a duty to lead this change by example, and that means throwing ICE out.
The work is not done. The support is so overwhelming in the community. Everybody is unified on this. We know why we're here. We want this building closed. We want ICE out of this town, okay? There's no debate about that.
Once inside City Hall, the city council meeting became heated. Protesters interrupted the session and councilors walked out of the room. City Councilor Angelita Morillo invited protesters into a separate space for a conversation. Morillo told protesters that closing the McAdam ICE facility may pose risks to immigrants who may otherwise be sent to Tacoma or held in unknown federal buildings where their attorneys cannot find them. Here are some excerpts of Councilor Morillo's statements.
I understand that there are a lot of people that think the courts are completely corrupt, nothing is working anymore, and I understand that perspective. The reality is that a lot of immigration attorneys are still getting people out through the legal system. We do not want to concede legal ground before we have lost it, because we are inches away from full-blown fascism at this point. And if we have any protections under the law, you do not cede those until they are forcefully services, the processing facility. That does not stop ICE. These people still need to have their immigration where they just get their paperwork signed. If they fail to get some of that paperwork done on time, according to ICE and to immigration, then suddenly you are in peril of losing your entire immigration status because you missed a meeting. Some people have said, well, why can't ICE just do it virtually? There are tons of federal buildings and they can set up camp everywhere. The difference is the immigration attorneys will not know where to find their clients.
The counselor talked with protesters for around 45 minutes. She was later joined by Counselor Samir Kanal. They expressed concern about the violations and safety hazards the protesters complained about. Cabo caught up with organizer Beatriz outside.
So it went better than expected. You know, we were trying to get city council to respond to us. And so we got a few city council members to respond to us and move this forward. You know, we know that there's some ambition behind it and some like strength behind it. I do feel optimistic because we know the permit has been violated. We know that the permit lives on conditions and those permit has been violated. So we know we have the grounds to get this permit revoked.
A low-income apartment complex sits directly across the street from the Macadam ICE facility. The routine use of tear gas and munitions has affected the residents who live in the building. At times, protesters say federal officers have targeted residents with munitions. Portland Contra las Deportaciones invited an impacted resident to speak at the City Hall rally. Cabo asked the resident about their experience.
I live right across the street from the ICE facility.
And how has that been going for you?
Not good. Not good at all. I've lost weight. I've also thrown up brown stomach acid. I've also had to take my child to the hospital because they shot tear gas one night. It was a couple nights ago. And it was hot. So everybody had to close their window, but you know, everybody was asleep also. So my daughter had to get taken to the hospital because she got tear gas in her eye, which isn't good for her. So, yeah.
And how old is your daughter?
3. I'm a Vietnamese medical interpreter, and it makes me iffy on like doing my job sometimes because I live right across the street from there, and you know, I've caught everything they've been doing to people, recording them. Like, I've gone on the news about this. I've talked to, you know, OPB about this. So I've been pretty vocal about it. So it's also that little, you know, thought in my head, like, oh, what if I don't make it home because I'm being targeted for speaking out about this? Because they shot at me while I was on my balcony. I'm at home. Why are you shooting at me? So do I not have a right to speak out?
On September 17th, Portland Mayor Keith Wilson issued a land use violation notice to ICE for its conduct at the Macadam ICE facility. That's 2 months after activists interrupted City Council. In the meantime, activists continued to protest at council and city government events. Here's Izzy from Portland for Palestine at a later rally.
It was only after months of protest from you that City Council even acknowledged the problem. It was only after we disrupted their meetings and disrupted Mayor Wilson's interview with Bike Portland that they finally issued a notice of violation for ICE's conditional permit.
On September 27th, Donald Trump announced that he intended to deploy the National Guard troops to war-ravaged Portland. That's 10 days after Mayor Wilson issued the land use violation notice. Protests in front of the ICE building grew larger. Labor organizer Tyler Fellini was hit with mace while demonstrating against the National Guard deployment.
I was at the McAdam protest at the ICE building on Sunday.
Okay. And can you describe, like, what did it seem like there? What was the situation like on the ground?
Yeah. So I showed up and recognized a few other unionists, and the atmosphere was pretty relaxed, I would say. There weren't visible ICE agents. There were some speeches happening, or there weren't visible federal agents. There were some speeches happening. A couple hundred folks were there. At one point, folks took to the street in front of the building. some Portland police officers rode through and told people to get back on the sidewalk. Folks basically said, you know, why are you out here? I think that their folks are concerned about the Portland police collaborating with the federal agents. The Portland police folks left. Shortly after they left, federal agents came out. They were outfitted in riot gear as well as military fatigues. Many of them were carrying shields. I would say there's probably 20, 25 of them in a formation. They opened up their gate, came out, and immediately started pushing into the crowd to push us back. And when they did that, they created an opening so a vehicle or two vehicles could get in, and then they went back inside. And then sometime later, maybe 5 or 10 minutes after that, they assembled again on their side of the gate, again, 20 to 25 agents. When they came out the second time, they came out even more aggressive than the first time, and they shoved a Portland Association of Teachers member, and they knocked him backwards onto the ground. I saw him fall. I ran up to grab him to help pick him up. And, you know, we were just in regular street clothes. We're unarmed. He was understandably agitated. He was yelling at the federal agent who shoved him down for no reason. And then out of nowhere, that federal agent pulled out a can of some chemical agent. I don't know exactly what they used. It felt like Bear Mason. Just sprayed the both of us pretty indiscriminately. And, you know, we had to immediately kind of fall back and get off of the street, and some street medics were able to help both of us out. Both of us ended up having to go to the ER just to get checked out. And then, yeah, that was kind of the end of my day.
Told KBOO that they couldn't open their eyes for about 20 minutes after being sprayed. When they got home, the chemicals stung their skin even after showering.
You know, it really sucked in the moment, but I would say that that bit of pain is nothing really compared to kind of the anguish that a lot of our immigrant neighbors are experiencing at the hands of ICE. We need to be very clear about what's happening in this moment, and that's the rise of authoritarianism in the United States. Portland has a long history of protest, and so many individual activists are very comfortable with taking to the street. And we know our recent labor history workers are very comfortable striking and taking to the street. And so we really need those forces to come together.
Activists and protesters were not the only people who jumped into action after Trump announced his intention to activate the National Guard. Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield filed a temporary restraining order to block the troop federalization within 6 hours after Trump's announcement. KBOO asked Attorney General Rayfield about what National Guard activation would mean for Oregon.
So the president used a law that allows him to federalize the National Guard, and effectively what he's trying to do is put those troops on the streets here in Portland. And I think if you think about common sense and the way that you normally just interact in America or in Oregon, we all know that that's not normal to see the United States military on the streets of our cities. And the reason it's not normal is you have various laws that, again, prevent the president from federalizing the National Guard, except under really extreme circumstances. And so in this case, you have three circumstances, and you have to meet either one of those or any one of those. And one of them is, you know, is this an invasion, by a foreign entity? And obviously, and we can say that that's not an invasion going on. There's not a rebellion going on. The president can still execute the laws of the United States. And so those are the three conditions which you would federalize or can federalize the National Guard. And obviously none of those are going on in Oregon right now.
So federal military intervention has been attempted in other U.S. cities in recent months, and there have been lawsuits to attempt to stop those, right? So is there anything unique about Oregon in comparison to D.C., L.A., and Chicago?
And so what you're seeing right now is the normalization of the United States military on the streets of our cities. So you saw it in California, you saw it in Washington, D.C., it's talked about in Memphis, it's talked about in Illinois, and the orders have been executed here in Oregon. Each one of those situations is a little bit different, and the facts vary in the different states. The one thing that I would tell you here in Oregon, which is incredibly clear, is our facts are probably the clearest case of where the president should not have the ability to federalize the National Guard. Again, using those three different categories, whether there's a rebellion, an invasion, or whether the president can't execute the laws of the United States, it's really clear in Oregon that none of those conditions exist. And it's even more clear than it was in any of the other places. Washington, D.C. is a little bit more of a different animal than, say, a state. And so that's kind of a little bit of a different analysis, but really kind of the closest thing would be California. But again, the facts are vastly different on the ground between those two states. But what you really have is you have the president who has formulated opinion about what's going on in Portland, and his opinion has been based upon, you know, social media gossip, things that he's heard, and has been unwilling to listen or talk to people on the ground to actually understand what the circumstances are in Oregon, which is probably the big issue here in the dispute. Either that or it's incredibly politically motivated. And I think a lot of people, myself included, feel that way in terms of the recklessness of ignoring the facts on the ground. And then this attempt, again, as you're seeing it nationwide, even yesterday was probably one of the most disturbing things that you could hear in the United States, where the president talked about using American cities as training for the United States military. It's a wild time. Those things are un-American. That's the type of thing you expect to see in a third world country, not in an American city.
Is there like a final thing that you wish that Oregonians would hear kind of as they're trying to like understand this particular moment in time?
You know, the one thing that I keep thinking to myself is that, you know, I don't think that we as a society should wind up being the frog in boiling water. I think we have to put everything into context and look at everything that we're seeing and pushing back against that. And it started with the president attacking our independent judiciary. That's a hallmark of any democracy. Having an independent judiciary that's not going to be pushed around by a president, that isn't going to be pushed around by Congress. You now have politicians openly talking about gerrymandering and rigging our elections to maintain power in Congress. Talk about one of the most un-American things that you could blatantly just be so bold to talk about. You have a president that is leading through fear and not bringing together, where his own party can't say how they really feel because they're so fearful of retaliation. And then you have this normalization of military in our cities. This isn't the America that we want to live in. This isn't the America that we grew up in. It's a very different time, and I think we need to recognize all of the different elements that are kind of coming together and saying, this isn't what we want. But then at the same time that we as citizens sit there and say, this is not the state or the country that we want to be in, we then have to start talking about what we do want it to be like. Because I don't think as a society we can always run against things or talk about things that we're not for. We have to actually show people what this state and what this country can be. And that, to me, is a positive part, right? If you're only talking about the negative stuff, it gets really dark. But I think we have to be walking and moving towards something that we all have shared values, and to remember that no matter what your party affiliation is, I've never met a Republican or a Democrat who wanted bad schools. It just doesn't exist. And I've never met a Democrat or a Republican who doesn't want to be safe in their communities. There's a lot of common values that we do have, and yeah, we can really disagree vehemently with what's going on right now in America, but we need to work together on what we can do and focus on that collective future that we all have. And I really do believe that we can turn the corner in a moment like this, especially if we're holding the line with what this current president is attempting to do. And at the Oregon Department of Justice, you have, you know, 1,600 people that are working day in and day out throughout the weekend to make sure that we hold the line when it comes to defending our democracy.
That was Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield in an interview with KABU on October 1st. Rayfield appeared before Judge Karen Immergut on October 3rd to defend the temporary restraining order blocking the activation of the National Guard in Portland. A group of protesters gathered outside the Marco Hatfield Federal Courthouse in downtown Portland. They held brown signs with black lettering saying, "Guards go home." Music played from loudspeakers across the street.
This is an authoritarian regime that is trying to consolidate power, to try to consolidate his wealth. And one of the ways in which they're doing that is Donald Trump has been sending troops into American cities. It's unconstitutional, it's unconscionable, and we're not going to stand for it. So we're out here protesting. Specifically, there is currently a restraining order that's up in limbo that is supposed to hold off the National Guard troops from being deployed here. So we're here to tell the judge to rule in favor of that restraining order to keep troops out of Portland.
Our National Guard is used for deployments, for wildfires, for backup in major conflicts. For instance, Iraq. I was deployed during OEF and OIF. That's what deployments are for. Riots in LA, not Portland, who's just hanging out here loving, you know, nature.
I'm not gonna lie, we're here for a side quest. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, but you know, I came here for a walk, you know, I seen that.
I said, yeah, guards go home, you know. I don't like that. I don't like none of the.
I don't like
what Trump's doing to Portland, because, you know, I love Portland, you know, my favorite city.
Some Portland city councilors were also in the crowd.
My name is Mitch Green. I'm a Portland city councilor for District 4, which has downtown. I'm out here today to reaffirm our constitutionally protected right to protest and to have free speech and to reject Trumpism. What Trump is doing here with the deployment of the National Guard troops is unwarranted, unwanted, and it's the next step in a rise in authoritarianism, and we reject that.
Here's Councillor Samir Kanal.
I think it's really important that Portlanders come out here because we are in a position where the federal government would be sending troops here without any legal authorization to do so. This wasn't asked for, it's not wanted, it's not needed. As you can see, other than a little loud Rage Against the Machine right now, it's a very calm day. It's a perfect Portland weather. We're doing the things we always do. Nonviolent protest is a tradition in Portland that goes back decades. And so it's really vital that we all come together both to stand up for our right to do this, but also to say we do not need and it will not help to have the National Guard here. The estimates now it's going to be $10 million of federal money being spent on this. Can you imagine the good you could do with $10 million in Portland instead? And so it's wasteful, fiscally irresponsible, likely to be an attempt to violate Portlanders' rights, and we didn't ask for it, and there's no legal authorization. Today we're outside the courthouse, and our hope is that the judge will agree with us and put an injunction against this.
And now back to Councillor Green.
I hope today we get a favorable ruling on the temporary restraining order, but even if we don't, I hope to see Portlanders not be scared and cowed from this administration, but to sort of talk to their neighbors, friends, join an organization, and build systems of resistance, because this is not who we are, and this is not welcome in our town. I hope that people protect their neighbors from ICE, and we'll get through this, but the only way out is to band together and come in together in solidarity.
Portland journalist and filmmaker Erica Bolstad attended the hearing.
So the courtroom today, it was packed. The main courtroom was absolutely full. I was in an overflow courtroom, which was also full. It was very quiet inside that overflow courtroom. People were paying rapt attention to the hearing, which you could see and hear, of course, but you could see it up on a screen in the courtroom. And it was presided over by Judge Karen Immergut, and she got the case yesterday, I believe, maybe today, after the original judge recused himself from the case. And so she'd only had it for about a day.
Wolstad told KBOO that the state of Oregon and the city of Portland made several broad arguments against troop deployment. They were worried that the deployment would escalate tensions at the ICE facility. They also argued that deploying the National Guard without the consent of Governor Tina Kotek violates state sovereignty.
They also worried more broadly, kind of the big picture issues that they were looking at, or that the National Guard, if it's activated, that is something that could really change the role of military in society, and that this is a real test case. The attorney for the Justice Department, the federal lawyer who was arguing the president's side of this case, He described what was happening at the ICE facility as the work of, quote, vicious and cruel radicals. That's how he described it. And, you know, had a list of things that had happened at the ICE facility over the course of the last few weeks and months. However, most of what they were referring to, most of what the lawyer for the federal government was referring to, happened in June. That was when much of the action was happening, and so the judge was pretty skeptical of that, because what they were asking for is they were justifying the presence of federal troops with activity that was happening in June rather than the most recent activity. And so that was one of the things that the judge was pretty skeptical about.
Judge Immergut ruled against federalizing the National Guard in Oregon. Later in October, a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals allowed the federalization. In November, Immergut ruled the deployment illegal. Trump eventually pulled 200 federalized National Guard members out of Portland. Many independent organizations are also working to protect the rights of people in Oregon. KBOO News Director Althea Billings talked with Yvonne Garcia of ACLU Oregon. The ACLU is working with other organizations to offer free Know Your Rights trainings and other vital services via their campaign, Oregon for All.
What rights do immigrants have if they're picked up by ICE?
So one, I just want to recommend that everybody go and learn about the rights that we all have. And there are Know Your Rights education materials for everything, for what to do should you encounter law enforcement or police in public spaces or knocking at your door. Everybody has the right to remain silent, not discuss immigration status, citizenship, and that asking to ensure that proper paperwork like warrants are provided. One thing that is really important that if people are seeing what they perceive to be ICE activity, there is an organization called PIRC, P-I-R-C, the Portland's Immigrant Rights Coalition, and PIRC is a critical player in this, that this is the organization that is mostly volunteer-run, I should say, that receives tips and intake calls for reports of ICE, and then they can serve as verifiers of what's happening in the community. This is really important, one, because there is so much fear right now across our communities that we also don't want to unnecessarily add additional fear. So it's really important to ensure that sightings will be verified, and PIRC is a critical player in that. So definitely want listeners to be aware of PIRC, to have their phone number in their phone ready to make calls.
You are listening to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News. Tonight, we're spending the hour looking at the last 6 months of immigration protests in Portland and beyond. Coming up, we'll hear community organizers who were arrested and taken into the ICE facility. And we'll close this broadcast with some words from Portland High School students, as well as sounds from a day without an immigrant. So when you were taken into the ICE facility, what was it like in there?
It's honestly pretty horrible. So I didn't end up going to county jail, but the people who did go to county jail said it was better than the ICE facility, because when you're in the ICE facility, there's like no windows. It's just like a box, basically, and you feel like you're underground, which is like really harsh fluorescent lights. We were placed in these different holding cells, and inside the holding cells, there's no bedding or anything comfortable to sit on. It's just metal and concrete. And, you know, on the walls of these holding cells, there are actually posters that are encouraging people to self-deport and offering them money to self-deport.
That's Holly Brown, an organizer for Portland Contra las Deportaciones. On October 4th, Holly and four other organizers were arrested during a peaceful rally and taken into the ICE facility. Organizer Beatrice was also arrested.
Speaking about my experience regarding a few weeks ago,
So on Saturday, October 4th, I and four other organizers, we were detained by ICE, DHS, during our event that we had on that day. My first thoughts while being there was fear. The fear of the uncertainty, the fear of what would happen to me and my friends in the future. And then I realized how many people have been in the same position I have, since DHS seems to be making a hobby to grab and detain whoever they can, whenever they want, and make it into a hobby of enjoyment. Then I thought of the other group of people, the group who are defending and protecting, the immigrant community, and how much fear they have felt being inside that facility. I was held in the facility for 11 hours. 11 brutal hours with no food. We were only provided water bottles. The cells are kept cold with AC running the whole time. And there's only metal benches to lay on. So you're cold the whole time and there's no way to keep warm. In the windows, there's posters with instructions on how you can deport yourself.
After the announcement that Trump intended to deploy the National Guard, there were several large protests in front of the ICE facility. The crowds also included counter-protesters and right-wing media presence. Holly and other organizers were followed by a right-wing influencer who filmed them inside the ICE facility during their arrest.
There was someone following us with a camera the entire time. Yeah, that seems to be new. They're coming out in, like, vests and filming the protesters, and it's definitely a little eerie. Basically, from the time we were, like, taken back behind the gate, there was a woman that was holding the phone and just, like, keeping it on us the entire time and filming all of our faces, which is strange because they take our picture anyways.
The October scenes at the ICE facility differed slightly from the flamboyant atmosphere of the Portland No Kings protest that month. Kibu asked No Kings attendees why they participated.
I'm out here for my kids. I want to make sure that they have rights, that they're loved no matter who they are, and that they have some kind of a something to go to later on in life, you know?
I'm here for various reasons. One of them is I have a lot of friends and family that risk ICE threats, and so that's why I'm here today on my day off.
I love this country, and I feel like organizing against the oppression that's currently happening is the patriotic thing to do.
And what's your, what is your mask?
It's Hillary. Hillary Clinton, gone but not forgotten.
A little bit of everything under the sun concerning Trump, but I mean, just really demonstrating that there's racism and just not comprehending that this country would come to a stop without drowned people. Without immigrants.
Protests at the ICE facility continued later that evening. The following segment is from a newscast that aired on October 20th.
All right, so what are you making?
I'm making some ribs, some pork ribs today. We got this, our fourth rack and our fifth rack on right now.
They've been out here several times, and each time they've cooked.
I think it's important. I think that when it comes to any type of action or any time that people are stepping outside, especially for, you know, marginalized people, it's important that people have, like, calories in them. And also it's important for everybody to have different types of things. We have people who are medics down here. I saw a bunch of people who are running around, you know, all black, whatever. I was like, oh, nobody's cooking.
After 7 in the evening, officers began assembling behind the driveway gate of the building. Protesters began warning each other that guards were coming out.
Right now, it looks like some of the officers are lining up behind the gate to the ICE facility, which is something that's pretty common when they want to move cars in and out of the facility.
The officers fired flashbangs toward the back of the crowd. They sounded like fireworks and made red sparks. Officers used pepper balls to move protesters out of the area of the driveway. They also used gas canisters to clear the road while a vehicle exited the building. Clouds of gas filled the area in front of the building. It became impossible to see the building in the areas where gas was present. The gas made it difficult to breathe and stung any place it made contact with the skin. Kiba witnessed a red flashbang fired into the tear-gassed street, nearly hitting a protester in an inflatable pig costume. You could hear the sounds of a Black Hawk helicopter circling overhead. Portland Mercury reports that the gas deployment lasted for about 10 minutes. As the officers retreated back into the building, protesters in masks and goggles tried to pour water on the gas canisters. Some kicked the canisters back toward the building. Used gas canisters littered the street and the driveway to the ICE facility. Kebu talked with a veteran who was hit with a pepper ball during the event. He had a centimeter-wide round bruise on his forearm.
What happened just now?
I was standing across the street. I was past even the sidewalk. I was underneath the canopy that's got the speakers in it. And they came out because they were opening up the gate to let out a vehicle, and they let off just a barrage of stuff to clear the roads.
That was cute.
And then as they were starting to go back in, they just launched like World War III in the middle of the street. There wasn't anybody in there, but it was just nothing, and they were just firing pepper balls all around the crowd, and I took a couple hits.
And you're a veteran.
Yes.
Would you feel comfortable sharing your thoughts about like why, what drove you to be out here today?
This is not the country that I gave 9 years of my life in service for, and I'm out here to show that I completely disagree with this. It makes me sick to my stomach what they're turning my country into, and this is not what I fought for.
In Portland, high school students staged a walkout to protest ICE on December 16th. Kebu caught up with students from Lincoln High School as they marched to City Hall.
I'm out here today protesting against ICE because we don't like ICE, and they need to leave everybody alone and stop spreading hate. It's not helping nobody. And that's just my personal opinion. Some people may not agree with me, but we don't really care what you think. You're irrelevant.
I think what ICE is doing is going way past like what people are like. I don't know, guys, but ICE is just going way too far. And I think it's a really big problem.
I just think that it's like really awesome that we're able to like speak up against this, since it's like, I don't know, since immigrants are being really oppressed right now, and I just don't think that it's right that they're being like stripped from their families when they work hardworking, laboring jobs for our country, and are seriously like helping us and are human beings too, and don't deserve to be going through what they are going through.
You know, we've had a lot of families here in Portland that are, you know, constantly being ravaged and torn apart by ICE agents. And, you know, we're just not talking about it enough. So it's time we finally take a stand on it as students and, you know, let our voices be heard.
Well, I organize this because we have students and I have family and friends that can't speak up because they're in fear constantly. And I want ICE to stay away from our schools because they have been tormenting PPS District. And also, the violence against immigrants inside of facilities is terrible. They're not being given due process, which is unconstitutional. And I want to be able to speak for those who can't.
2 days later, Kebu caught up with Reina Lopez, the president of PACUN, Oregon's Farm Workers Union. PACUN and its precursor organization, the Willamette Valley Immigration Project, have advocated for immigration reform since the 70s. On December 18th, PACUN organized a strike for a day without an immigrant. Dozens of strikers stood in the rain and the wind on the side of Highway 99E in Woodburn.
My voice is a little raspy because we're yelling at the top of our lungs today. So hopefully the president, ICE, every Oregon elected official, every business owner in Oregon finally hears us. Our communities have experienced a reign of terror from ICE, every single day just here in our community. Our dads, our moms, our friends, our family, our brothers, our sisters, they're driving to work at the crack of dawn in the morning, and we don't know if they're gonna come back. It all really started on October 30th when 35 workers were going to work in the morning. Farm workers, construction workers, landscapers, and they did not come home that day because ICE was patrolling our community. They targeted a van that was full of workers, multiple vans full of workers, and they took them. And ever since then, our community has been literally so tense, scared, and also very upset. As you can tell today, businesses downtown are closed, and several lines have been crossed. Citizens have been arrested by ICE. Children have had guns pointed at them by ICE. And, you know, if that's not enough for people to have, like, their red lines crossed, then please tell me that a secret police force that only answers to Trump is scaring you, that covers their face. So today, a day without an immigrant is really to show our power, you know, and to go from this place of being scared to saying, hey, we're powerful here too. We are the workers that are the backbone of a lot of Oregon's most important sectors and a lot of America's most important sectors. We think that it's time that people recognize that, even people who are against our community, to be acknowledging that they don't eat without farm workers. They don't have houses without construction workers. They don't have a country without Mexicans and immigrants that come from all over the world and make this country great. So, you know, I think that one of the biggest reasons that it's important to be out here and say, hey, you guys need something from us. If you don't care about anything else, you all want our labor, you want our time, you want our money, and we're going to flex that today. That's why we're asking people to start practicing boycotting and taking the day off work, not buying anything, not shopping online, nothing, because we are one of the biggest economies in the world, just Latinos that live in the United States. And we're not even talking about the rest of the immigrant population. So what a day without an immigrant is today, why we're doing this, there's a few goals that we have. Number one is the very immediate goal of just getting ICE out of our community. We don't want them here. We don't want them terrorizing our family. They're not welcome in Woodburn. And the second thing is to really get other sectors to get excited.